Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and John Osher.
Where's Mike Dempsey?
I feel free right now.
Everyone might be wondering.
As fogged up as Mike Dempsey feels right now, I feel free.
Where's Mike Dempsey? We'll get to Mike and welcome him into the program here in just a moment as he is stuck.
Oh, he is stuck.
Out there in all the traffic.
We're not stuck, Tony.
Oh,
as
my goodness.
You and me and him.
He called me right about the time that I was leaving my house this morning, the time I usually leave, and he was like, hey, I need you to leave earlier. And I was like, that's not happening at this point.
Right.
So then I start listening to traffic, and I'm like, oh no. And I got lucky in that the accident that is on 95 northbound,
that Mike is,
he's
snarled in,
he's
right now
stuck. They have completely shut down 95 northbound, has been shut down now for almost 5 hours.
Yep.
Over there. So they're diverting all traffic to the World Golf Parkway as well as County Road 210 and trying to get you on US 1, but all those are parking lots, as you can imagine, as well as people trying to get into work. And not everybody has a job like Mike does where I can do it, or you can do it.
Anybody can do
right?
it. Come on.
And he could just turn around and go home if he needed to. But today's a pretty newsy day. I'd love to come in here on a Monday and tell you that after Jaguars minicamp, you know, it was like, well, we saw a couple guys flash. Not a whole lot to it really out there this weekend. Unfortunately, the story that developed on Friday changed all that.
Yeah.
With the Dante Fowler Jr. injury, the torn ACL, he's going to be out for the rest of the year. Obviously, that'll be a big talking point for us today here on Jaguars Today. I'm Fat Tony. John Osher alongside here on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. And with that, I think we got Mike Dempsey up on the phone line. And let's welcome in Mike. Mike, how you feeling this morning?
I'm all right. My air conditioning's holding up. I have plenty of gas in the tank, so I'm pretty good, Tony. I texted you at 8:30 this morning, right?
Yeah.
And I had already been stuck in traffic for 15 minutes at that point. I was not listening to the traffic on the radio. I was listening to Jeff and Dan opine about the players and such. And I passed the World Golf Village exit going north at about 8:15. I am yet to get to State Road 210. That is, what, 5 miles?
Yeah, it's
right?
About five
I mean,
miles.
That's truly what it's been. Now, I'm within maybe a half mile of 210, so wish me the best getting there.
So maybe,
sometime
maybe by
the
time we get
out.
Off air, Mike, you'll be at County Road 210 at least, where you can turn around and head back home.
I think 30 minutes and I'll be at 210 is my guess right now. I've seen a motorcycle run out of gas, guy have to get off it and start pushing. So I guess I'm better off than that guy. And also saw a guy in the breakdown lane a couple miles past the last point where you could cut through the median, just start backing up and going back and hope that no emergency vehicles were using it. But it's obviously a significant accident and possible loss of life. So certainly nothing to laugh about or anything like that. But it doesn't look like I'll be seeing you guys in person today.
No, it certainly doesn't sound like it. Even if you were at 210 now, I don't think you're going to make it here to the stadium by the time we get done with the 2 hours today on Jaguars Today. But obviously, a newsy weekend, and I'll start with you, John. Just what did you see when Dante Fowler went down? What was your initial reaction to the injury?
Well, I saw my TJ Yeldon tweet going out, because that's where my head was, you know, when he got hurt, which is sort of it's the risk of tweeting during practice. But I looked up and saw Dante Fowler down, and I went, what? So it became pretty clear pretty quick that it was not an insignificant injury. I mean, that it was going to be a bad thing. Sometimes you can't tell when guys go off. There was that period where it was too early to tell. But, you know, the mood went south very, very quickly, inside the building, outside the building. It's a tough one. I mean, it's from looking at the video, from looking at the Vine, all the stuff that was out there, it's one of those things that happens, and you hate to see it. You know, there were people, I guess, blaming Watts Dantzler, which was sort of ridiculous.
It's crazy.
Fowler said the same thing. It was ridiculous. It's a football thing, and when big guys move around and there's a twist here and a twist there, I always tell people, I'm always surprised more of them don't get hurt than they do. I mean, because they are big human beings going at a high level. And this was a case where something twisted and something tore. Yeah. It's too bad.
I know for me, unfortunately, I wasn't able to be out there on Friday because I had duties over at the Players Championship with the station. So I was stuck doing updates from 1 to 7 in that room. And the way we do updates from TPC Sawgrass is there's the big media room where they got all the scoreboards and everything. And we have a little cubby basically in the back of the room. So I'm separated from everybody in that room.
Which is how they want it.
Right. Well, it's good for everybody, including me.
Right.
So for 5 hours, I'm sitting there just stewing on this, right? Like, once I see the video, the news comes out that Dante Fowler's hurt at practice and he was grabbing a knee, and I'm like, oh no. And then the video hits Twitter and I see that video, and while the team's not saying anything, anyone who's been watching football for any length of time and has seen these kind of injuries,
pretty high percentage chance.
Right.
That,
you look at it, you go, oh, that's an ACL. Like, as soon as you see it, it's like it's an ACL just because of the awkward way he stepped, and then that knee just gave way. That's generally what it turns out to be. And so I had people, you know, on Saturday when I came out for camp, they were like, yeah, I could hear it, like, in your voice. Like, the way that I was talking changed. And I think that's pretty much how the city felt for that hour after that happened.
Whether or not, you know, you're objective journalist, you're stepping away from it, your team employee,
stinks,
your fan, whatever. As I think I wrote Friday or Saturday, even the media here on Saturday, nobody wanted to write that story. You know, because here's a kid at the very start of his career, a franchise with a front office and head coach who are trying to do things right and who are doing things right. And by all accounts, a really good kid in Fowler. And it's not like his career is over, but it's certainly a difficult time and a difficult thing to see this happen right at the beginning of it.
No, no doubt about it. And I know, Mike, you were on with XL Primetime basically when the injury happened, talking to those guys about what you had seen at camp to that point, and then you walk back out to the practice field to find out Dante Fowler's hurt, right?
Truly, within about a span of 3 or 4 minutes, Tony, I went on with the guys, and I walked away from the field and went behind the grandstand and was telling Hacker and T-Wig that, you know, come on, look, there's really not that much to see. Guys are running around. Rashad Green looked a little bit nervous, blah, 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 but, you know, all in all, just a great day for Jacksonville, Players Championship, great day to be out here at minicamp. And I walk, I hang up, all right, see you later. I walk back around, and Tyler's there, Tyler Devitt, our producer, and he goes, oh, that stinks, doesn't it? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I mean, it happened that quickly. I just missed it. And I see, you know, Dante's carted off the field. They took him out. They took him to the cool zone area. Anyone who's been to the practice field, it's at the far end of the field in the middle, and they kind of snuck him out through a spot in the gate there and took him in a cart through the parking lot. And that was an indication that, you know, you knew it was pretty bad. You could tell the video was going around almost immediately. People in the stands had taken video, and some of the photographers on the sideline had it. So you got to see what went down. And I agree. Look, Dantzler had nothing to do with this play. They may have been touching each other, but he could have just as likely, Dante Fowler, been running around one of those cones that the defensive end run around in drills. The guy runs. He's an athlete. He's run before. He's run this offseason. It's just one of those things. He's never had a leg injury at any level of football. It's a fluke kind of thing. It's just a shame that it has to happen to anybody, and certainly for us here in Jacksonville to have it happen to a guy picked third overall in a draft that was praised from top to bottom. And we heard how Washington said once Dante Fowler came off the board, all the trade interest dried up for the number five pick. People were excited about this guy, clearly, and you don't pick him at that spot unless you think he's going to be a contributor. And now we just have to hope for the best for a full recovery.
No, we do, and we'll get into whatever repercussions we think this may have for the team in 2015 and beyond here in just a moment. The fan feedback spotlight today centered on Dante Fowler Jr. and that injury. How much, if at all, do your expectations for the 2015 change after the injury to Dante Fowler Jr.? A lot of the same kind of answer coming in already this morning. We'll get to some of your responses a little bit later on. We'll put in our two cents on what we think it may do for this Jaguars team in 2015. But my bigger question is about 2016 and beyond now with Dante Fowler. So we'll get into that as well. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today. John Osier, the smile comes to his face as soon as I mention the Wild West.
Two good things. No Mike Dempsey and a Guns and Gold. I mean, this turned into a great day.
It's not a great one. Dante, buddy.
Yeah, well.
We got Dante. We got Dante to mourn. And I spent all Saturday talking to fans who were still in mourning over the Dante Fowler Jr. injury while we were broadcasting live from out at TPC Sawgrass. We'll talk about the short and long-term repercussions from that injury for Dante Fowler and for this football team as we continue along here on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL 92.5 FM. A Wild West Guns and Golden Monday. Thank you for joining us here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Again, wish it was an uneventful Monday here on Jaguars Today, but unfortunately, we don't get to talk about the nothing that happened this weekend at rookie minicamp with the big story with Dante Fowler Jr. out for the year after a torn ACL on Friday. His first hour as a Jag.
Yeah.
And there it goes for a guy who's never been hurt. Especially never had a leg injury, but 37 out of 37 games at the University of Florida. And for a guy that you got to feel like a lot of offenses were circling when they were putting together a game plan for the last 2 years, especially not a whole lot of talent on that defensive line. There he is in his first hour of practice as a member of the Jags down for the rest of the year in May.
And evidently has never missed a game for anything except when he was in Pop Warner and he was too big to play. Was the last time he hasn't played football. So it's too bad. I mean, it's really not what anybody wanted. In the long term, again, you draft in the first round, you draft for the long term. You're hoping Dante Fowler is a 5, 10, 12-year player. In the big picture, there wouldn't seem to be a reason that he can't be that. So all those things, logically, as somebody who follows this team, you sort of tell yourself, hey, it's going to be okay. This is a core guy for the long term. But boy, for the short term, it's a gut punch.
No, it definitely is. And we'll welcome Mike Dempsey back in here in just a couple of moments as he's stuck in traffic over there because 95 is shut down, and he comes in from St. Augustine every day. So he's been stuck in that for probably 2 hours now. Is about the time.
I wonder how far he's gotten since we last talked to him.
My guess is about 25 feet.
It's one of those where you're looking outside your car and you can see the little pieces of gravel you're passing.
Yep, yep.
It's awful.
We've all been in it before, maybe not to the degree that
we're not in it now.
He's dealing with it right now. We'll get back to Mike here in a couple minutes. The video that came out, at least the one that most of you, if you have seen the video of what happened out there with Dante Fowler and that injury to the ACL. The video, at least that I saw, was taken by a fan that was there, as you know, it was free and open to the public this weekend. And he was out there. Chad Weeks is going to join us on the phone line right now at 641-1010. He actually took that video that you've probably seen making its way around. Chad, thanks for calling us today.
No problem, guys. Man, what a gut punch for Jaguar fans everywhere, man. It was awful.
No, it certainly was. I heard that you were especially excited about the number 3 overall pick, Dante Fowler Jr. Bought a jersey, all that, right before you took that video, right?
Yeah, man, I was kind of, man, I'm a season ticket holder for Gators, you know, and Jaguars, so I've really followed Dante's career, and, man, just a great player. Was excited about him coming, couldn't wait to see him taking Andrew Luck down in the division, and now, man, it's just, it's such a blow. But I bought my jersey 20 minutes before that I took that video, and I was just so disappointed, man. It was bad.
So were you shooting Dante Fowler a lot that day? I mean, did you have your phone on him a lot, or was that just kind of a fluke?
I have my phone on him a lot. I have a lot of other videos of him doing bag drills and getting coached up. And then when they switched to 11-on-11 kind of scrimmages, I really kind of zoomed in on him. I have a video of him getting over the edge, and, you know, the red jersey quarterbacks you're not allowed to hit, but on one of those plays, you saw him make a move on that right tackle, and you knew, you know, if that was a live play and that quarterback didn't have a red jersey on, man, he was done for. And then the very next play, you know, after that great play, I was videoing, I was preparing my, oh, what a stud, you know, Instagram caption, and then boom, he goes down. And it's like, not many people realize what was going on. In fact, if you watch the video, people are clapping, you know, because they're watching the play down the field. And I'm sitting here with this video like, oh my gosh, our third pick of the draft, he just blew his knee out. You know,
Tony, I was actually, I was tweeting, heard the applause. That's what I looked up to see.
What happened?
Yeah, I mean, that was the, and I think that was sort of what everybody went through. Chad can probably speak to it, but that's what everybody sort of went through. Their eyes sort of shifted back and saw him down, and then the applause, of course, went away really for the rest of the day. I mean, it was
sure.
It was a tough day to be around there after that.
What was the conversation like in, you know, amongst the fans in that next couple minutes after Dante Fowler went down, Chad?
I mean, honestly, if I have to be honest, I didn't stick around. Like, I saw them take him over to the side, and I went around to the front and watched him being carted into the stands. And, you know, he's telling the fan with a big smile on his face, I'm good, I'm good. So I'm thinking, well, maybe he's okay, you know, like, and then after that, I was like, well, I'm out of here. I was kind of bummed. I got my jersey. I was going to get an autograph afterwards, and I just left. I called my brother. He's a big Jaguars fan. He actually drives from South Carolina to come to Jaguar game. That's, you know, he's really hardcore Jag fan. And we were just both super bummed about it. And, I saw some Twitter discussion about the injury and stuff. And I was like, well, actually I have a video and I posted it. And, you know, I figured other people had the same video, but it turns out like nobody else had actual video of the injury and my Twitter blew up.
I'm sure it did. I know that that's where I saw the video, Chad, and it's a pretty extraordinary video.
How many views did you get on it, or is there a counter like that?
It's a counter. There's like 1,600 retweets. That's how many people retweeted it
as of
right now.
I guarantee you got a lot more views than that.
Yeah. What's funny is I actually don't even really use my Twitter. I actually, 8 months ago was the last time I used my Twitter. I'm more of an Instagram guy. So it's funny that it turned out my Twitter got blown up that day. So.
That's wild.
Appreciate the call today, Chad, and hopefully in a year you'll be able to go watch him at a camp and take some more video, brother.
Yeah, hopefully I'll be able to get my autograph on my Dante jersey, man. I'm bummed, but I know he's going to be a good player. He's going to bounce back. He's a real high-character, class-act guy, and I know he's still going to be a pillar for this Jags organization. So.
All right. Thanks for the call, Chad.
All right. And he's right about that, by the way. Probably have time to talk about it later, but the way Fowler handled the injury, the way he handled talking to the media on Saturday, I get that, you know, how guys talk to the media isn't that big a deal to fans. It's just 15 media guys out there listening to him. But his approach and his genuineness in terms of the upbeat way that he was thanking the fans for the tweets and the texts, and then you know, it was impressive in that he still seemed legitimately positive and was not surly, was not down, was, you know, didn't seem to let it get to him, which, again, that's pretty cool.
No, it really is. And for a guy like Dante Fowler, who's, look, every time I've seen him in front of a camera has been that guy.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there was this genuine excitement to be coming to Jacksonville, and I don't think it was just because he was the number three pick. I think he would have been excited anywhere he wound up going, but I think he was genuinely excited to be in Jacksonville with Gus Bradley and this coaching staff and this team and the opportunity to be the number three pick in the draft. Like, I think he has been enjoying all that. I think that he's handled himself in a way, you know, I can remember after the pro day and the conversation, because I had you on with me talking about this, you know, I'd be surprised if I got past number three with the Jags.
Right.
And it was this conversation of, well, is he hearing something or is he just a confident guy? And he's a confident guy.
At the time, it was probably a little of both. I thought it was nice to see that he didn't change under pressure and duress this weekend. So, you know, it's the old thing. If hard work and attitude and desire and dedication get you back, then he'll be fine. There's more to it with an ACL. Even though guys make it back, it's still a serious injury.
Sure.
I mean, he's got a long, frustrating road ahead. Anybody who's dealt with it will tell you that. But if attitude and performance and desire can get you back, he'll make it back.
No, and I think he'll be back. I think, honestly, with the way ACL surgery works today, I think he'll be fine. as a player and as an athlete. Now, there is always that outside concern that you're not going to be as explosive, mm-hmm. as quick, you know, because it is a major injury and a major surgery for a player that's what they're relying on.
And at that position, it's tricky. But again, the research has shown that people, especially who have him early, and he's 20 years old,
yeah.
can make it back, can get it back. And I think 2016 will still be an issue as far as the explosiveness, because the reality is, even though they've come a long way with it, usually it takes till that second year. And he'll have 16 months until 2016.
Mm-hmm.
There could still be some ramifications there. 2017, you would hope you see that guy.
And that's kind of the disappointment of it.
I don't like sitting here talking about 2017 anymore.
Right.
And people like hearing it.
Right. And we'll get into some of the long-term ramifications. It is interesting, you know, Dave Caldwell, and I think the question was more about Todd Gurley and whether or not this team would be interested in him throughout this draft process.
Yes, it was.
Talking about ACLs, but it was a couple months ago now that he talked about ACL injuries for players, and I think it was 26.
Yeah, Ryan O'Halloran of the Times Union at the owners' meetings when we were all talking to Dave, as it was breaking up, just kind of said, I think it was Gurley in that light. And Dave, they clearly had looked at Gurley at that point and had done some research and had some thought into it, and basically said if it's before 26, typically they're not worried about it. The tone in Dave's voice that day talking about Gurley was very matter of fact of, yeah, we wouldn't worry about it because of this. And
right.
Because of a lot of things, but particularly because of that, it's come so far that the odds would certainly seem to be with Fowler.
Yeah, and I view it almost the same way as a baseball fan, too, that I view Tommy John surgery. It felt like 20 years ago that was a bit of a death sentence to a guy's career.
Right.
Now it's almost like, oh, you need Tommy John? Go get it.
It's
like you'll be better.
Let's get it fixed and go.
Right. You'll be better off if you just go get the surgery. ACL feels not exactly the same way, but similar. In that, look,
right.
it's not the end of a guy's career now when he has an ACL. They still haven't figured out what to do really with that microfracture, which if it had been a microfracture to that knee, now you're dealing with something that's like, whoa, like, can he ever be?
And you also didn't hear Gus on Saturday talking about there being anything else involved, which is usually a good sign. If it's one ligament, then you go and you get that fixed. You work on it, get it back.
Sure. Let's welcome back in Mike Dempsey here for a couple of moments. And Mike, kind of cool to hear from the guy who took the video that we've all watched. I know me, I've watched it about a dozen times now in the last couple of days.
Yeah, I would rather not have to talk to him today, right? I mean, you said, Tony, we'd rather be coming on talking about, well, there's not a whole lot to see at minicamp, let's be honest, you know, other than to get you excited about just a glimpse of your draft picks. But that's the situation that they find themselves in. And I think, guys, really, if you look at it, John, you keep alluding to, you don't just pick a guy for this year, you're picking him for the long term. For this year, they've got Chris Clements, and they've got Andre Branch in the final year of his rookie deal. They have Ryan Davis. I think the picture was going to become a lot less clear if they didn't add a Leo pass rusher beyond this year. So I think they can get by. It's certainly not a situation you want to be in. You expect this guy to come in and maybe be the most talented guy in your group immediately, if not the most productive. But they were sufficient, at least, in getting sacks last year. I know a high percentage of their pressure has resulted in sacks. They need to do a better job of getting more overall pressure. But it's not like they're completely devoid of talent at the position. It's just that, you know, your margin for error is a lot thinner now than you'd like it to be.
You would have been better with him. I don't think you're dead in the water without him.
Correct.
I also said in Jeff Prosser, who I rarely credit, but 940 or 945 this morning, I heard him say something that I had said and I thought a lot about over the weekend. I think considering this team right now, in the short term, I would have almost been more distraught had T.J. Yeldon got hurt than Fowler for the short term next year, because Yeldon looked really good. And that running back position is one that if you're really good right off the start, you can expect some productivity. Pass rush,
yeah, I agree
early
with that.
Is a little more difficult to expect big productivity early, usually. There are exceptions, but it sometimes takes a while for that guy to get going. So in that sense, this the story of camp or whatever this was this last weekend that hasn't been talked about is Yeldon looked really, really good, I thought.
Yeah, he did.
No, he looked fantastic.
Again, tough to measure it, right, when they're not really going through full contact drills. But you can see how smooth he was. I thought he was very, you know, decisive in his cuts. He looked quick for a big guy. He looked, you know, he didn't look bulky to me either. I know a lot of people remarked it, how big he was. He's a tall guy. He looked very lean, you know, fit. And I think of T.J. Yeldon. I think Alabama running backs, not that they're plodding, but, you know, just a little bit, bulkier. And he did look very smooth. And you're right, you know, in terms of the immediate short-term impact, Tony and I said, look, I'd be happy if the guy got 8 sacks this year. It'd be tremendous. He doesn't need to be a 12, 15-sack guy out of the gates. But, you know, so often as we saw, J.J. Watt wasn't that guy, and then he exploded in his second year. Well, he's not going to have that. Robert Quinn exploded in his second year. He's not going to have that. He's going to have to push that off. And even when we see him back on the field, guys, we're not going to know where is he, because we didn't really get to see him at the professional level. So it's going to be tough to gauge where Dante Fowler is in his rehab until we see him, and I guess on the field, and him describe how he feels compared to how he was pre-injury.
Yeah, and that's a lot of the frustration with this injury happening now and what it cost him in that rookie year. And that's why I talk about the long-term effect of this injury and the reasons they made the pick they did, and looking at where they are now with this guy as he's going to have to go through an ACL recovery. Mike, we're going to give you a few minutes off here and let you concentrate on crawling along wherever you happen to be. Have you got the 210 yet?
I am on 210 right now, and I've gone at least 100 yards on 210, which is nice.
Woo! All right, well, let us know a little bit more about Wild West Guns and Gold, and we'll catch up with you a little bit later on.
You know it, Tony. Wild West Guns and Gold, as John Osier knows, our Monday sponsor here on Jaguars Tonight. North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, everything from revolvers to sporting arms, everything in between. They'll meet or beat any gun shop's price in the United States of America, guaranteed. Wild West Guns and Gold, where you can even trade your gold for guns. That's right. Visit guns4jax.com. That's guns, the number 4, J-A-X, or visit Wild West Guns and Gold on Southland Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693-0777. That's 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Tony, I'll talk to you guys coming up shortly.
Yeah, we'll talk to you again in the 11 o'clock hour. Mike, be safe out there, buddy.
Thanks.
All right, that's Mike Dempsey. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday edition of Jaguars Today. I'm Fat Tony. John Osier alongside. We'll continue the conversation about Dante Fowler Jr. and where this leaves this team, not only for 2015, which is the fan feedback question of the day today. Do your expectations change for 2015 with the injury to Dante Fowler Jr.? But we'll talk about 2016 and beyond and kind of where he fit into the plan, why he was made that number 3 pick, and how much this injury could affect that plan that the Jaguars had in place as we continue along here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
But just like Coach Gus said, it's going to be good things and it's going to be challenges. You know, the good thing was that we were able to go out, you know, practice and show our capabilities and what we're capable of. And the bad thing was, you know, this injury that I had. But we're going to get over it, and, you know, we're going to work really hard, and we're going to grind like this, just like how we'll grind through it with anything. So we're going to be able to get through it.
The comments of Dante Fowler Jr. on Saturday after learning that he tore that ACL in practice on Friday. And like we said, John, just kind of an upbeat guy. Like, he's not real down, even despite the circumstance he now finds himself in.
Yeah, and there's no way somewhere deep down he's not just hurting. I mean, you have to be. But certainly credit to him for handling it well and for putting as positive a face on it. And, you know, I don't know if brave's the right word, but, you know, he handled it well. And he does have a long road ahead of him. I'm sure anybody he's talked to, he's close with Todd Gurley. They talked immediately afterward, or very soon afterward. So he watched what Gurley went through this off season. They trained around each other in Pensacola, So he knows what he's up against. But I think also being around Gurley, he also knows that it's an injury that you can overcome and come back from. So there was a little bit of talk, speculation on Friday when the Jaguars didn't immediately rule him out for the season. Could he come back late in the season? remember, this is May. So you're talking June, July, August, September, October, November, December.
Right.
7 months until December. That's insanely fast and really can't see any reason to take that sort of risk getting him back that quick. Even Colvin, who came back off an ACL and played, was about two and a half months more than that. Those two and a half months matter very much with an ACL.
Sure they do. And
so I don't see any way in the world that's even a thought right now.
No, I can't imagine it being a thought right now. Now, if he was recovering extraordinarily quickly and they get to, you know, the beginning of December and they feel good about it, maybe. Maybe, but I wouldn't anticipate that being any of the discussion.
It better be a
perfect
storm of good.
Right, and that's what it would take, in my opinion, too, for him to get back on the field in 2015. You're going to see him next April, May. When they get back for camp in May next year, the OTA start for this team for 2016.
Yeah, cause if it's,
that's
if,
when you're going to see
if it's four games at the end of the season, for this case, probably better to have 17 months of... Okay, you're 17 months out now. Let's go. Now you're ready. Everything's in good shape.
I talked about this a little bit this weekend because I was doing shows from out at TPC Sawgrass Saturday and Sunday afternoon. So Dante was bound to come up. And looking at where it leaves the team, I think in 2015, the team is in a position to handle it pretty well, mm-hmm. right? And I'm not worried so much about what's going to happen to this team and the expectations in 2015. When they drafted Dante Fowler, and we had talked about this in the weeks and months leading up to the draft, the reason I liked the Dante Fowler pick so much was because when you look at this roster for 2016 and beyond, especially at that Leo position, you feel pretty good about Clemens and even Branch in 2015, especially if those were guys that were going to be the other pieces around a Dante Fowler Jr. as he was kind of figuring out the NFL game. And if there were moments in games where it felt like Dante seems a little lost right now, all right, let's put Clem in.
Right.
Right? Like that, you had that opportunity in 2015. It's probably not going to be there in 2016 for this football team, which is where the concern comes in. You talk about if it is going to take this guy a year to figure it out, and maybe it will, maybe it won't. We don't know. He could have come in and been a phenom from the start. We don't know that. Unfortunately, we're not going to get that answer in 2015. But I hear Jeff Loggeman. Right? The night of the draft, he's doing the show, and he's like, he said before they drafted him, Dante Fowler Jr. would be my pick. I would make it very clear to the fans that he's not going to come in his opinion, and be a 12, 14 sack guy. He's going to need a little bit of time to figure this thing out. Well, that's fine. If he's coming in 2015 and he's got Clem and Branch, Branch isn't under contract for 2016.
Right.
Right now, when you look at that Leo position beyond this season, where I feel okay with it in 2015, but you look at it in 2016, now you're talking about Dante Fowler Jr. coming off an ACL and Chris Smith basically being the guys you have playing that position right now.
It's not ideal.
No.
it's certainly, that's the dynamic that the injury Friday changed. And now you don't know going into 2016 what you have. You assume, you hope, you believe, you project, but you haven't seen it. So it's the question becomes, do you draft later in the draft? Do you sign free agent at that point to sort of help you along there? I think those are questions to play out. I don't know those are questions anybody has the answer to right now.
No, and maybe Branch earns the contract. Because certainly you would think his role expands now compared to what it was going to be this season. There were some people talking about Clemens possibly being a training camp cut. I didn't foresee that happening. I thought they'd probably keep all three of those guys for at least this 1 year. Again, because of the dynamic of it gives you the opportunity to be good with any of those guys on the field.
Well, and the reason you don't is because of what happened Friday.
Right. You don't know.
Guys get hurt.
Yeah. You don't know.
So I don't think that was as much of a given as perhaps it was portrayed to be in some circles.
Sure, sure. Like I didn't ever think it was a real possibility they were going to cut Andre Branch. They're not cutting Branch because he's cheap, and they're not going to. I didn't think they would cut Clemens because he's effective. Like there's no reason to let go of either one of those guys, especially not now with the injury to Dante Fowler Jr. But it is for they talked about even making the Fowler pick too, that, you know, we had scouted in next year's draft. We think there's one first round defensive end.
Right.
Well, now unless they're in position to get that guy,
right?
It's the picture for 2016, and it's why they made this decision
right.
in 2015 that puts them behind the eight ball a little bit in the development process with that position. They hadn't addressed it.
Right.
Until now. They hadn't addressed it as far as getting younger at that position
right.
until now, and they finally take their shot at this thing, and there it goes. An hour into practice.
The thing that's too bad is there is a sense that, yes, you never absolutely count on rookies to be your core, but there's also something special about this guy. You even saw it in the first hour of practice if you were watching him. He was tired. After each drill, he was winded. Which is what you expect from a first-round rookie who hasn't had a chance to do a whole lot of football conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
But when he ran those drills and when he did the things, if you put him side by side, it was not hard to tell out there who the number three pick in the draft was.
Right.
Which sometimes it is. Sometimes you're sitting there and you don't really see a difference in guy. He was quick. He was explosive. You would think he doesn't lose all that, and he's got a lot of that coming into 2016. But there was – you could watch this guy, and it wouldn't have surprised you if he had been more of an immediate impact player than most rookies are.
Yeah, and when you go to a rookie mini camp, basically what you want, if you're standing there watching it, at least in my opinion, is the 7-8 draft picks, however many you had, you want to be, oh, there's a draft pick. Like,
right.
you don't need to
and
see
you
a number
– saw that – out of Yeldon.
Right.
You certainly saw it out of Fowler in the brief time that he was out there. You saw it a little bit out of the seventh rounder. I'm drawing Neil Sterling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were some signs in all the draft picks that were in an environment where you could see that. The offensive guard couldn't see much out of that. But Fowler and Yeldon really stood out when they were healthy.
No, they did.
And Yeldon's still healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I was only out there for the first hour of practice on Saturday, but I can tell you, Yeldon, it was like, you didn't need to see the name on the back. You
right.
could tell this guy, and he should be doing that. You know, with the other undrafted
right.
guys out there and the unsigned, you know, the guys that they're bringing in basically as camp bodies, you need your draft picks
yeah.
to be the guys that you're going, oh,
even
there's
on
one
Saturday
of our guys.
Morning, though, I ran into Frank Frangie, and we were talking, and Frank, I guess, called a few of Yeldon's games, and I said, boy, Frank, I hate to say it after one practice, but when you watch Yeldon move, what I always look for in a minicamp practice is something to stand out where you look at somebody and legitimately say, boy, that kid's got X or that mm-hmm. kid's got Y. And Yeldon's feet, his agility, his vision, even in that environment, he made those drills look very, very easy. And sometimes that doesn't happen in a minicamp.
No.
So as much as you can get out of a two-day deal like that, he made you feel very strongly about what he could potentially do. Hadn't done anything yet, but those were good signs.
Yeah, you feel good about that player
yeah.
after 2 days of practice. Now, again, take that for whatever it's worth.
And I'm usually Mr. It's not past judgment until we see him in pads.
Mm-hmm.
But he had some special characteristics.
No, he certainly did. And I could see that just in the brief time I saw him on Saturday. T.J. Yeldon stood out on mm-hmm. that football field with all those other guys. And last year I felt like Allen Robinson really stood out
yeah.
during the rookie minicamp with his hands especially. It was like, woo, they might
yeah.
have something special here. So there are guys in the last couple of years that have stood out that I felt good about there. And it's translated to the field once we got to the regular mm-hmm. season. So, look, you want your draft picks to stand head and shoulders above everybody else out there because they're playing against guys that probably aren't going to be playing on Sundays.
Right.
So they need to be guys that are standing out. Unfortunately, with the injury to Dante Fowler, again, all the questions that you may have had about what kind of impact he's going to have are delayed for
yeah.
another year.
We're talking
and
about
now you
it
have
in
to
15
add,
months.
Right, you have to add ACL injury to the equation as well. So for fans out there who are still nervous about what they're going to end up getting out of that number three pick, it's completely justified to be nervous about what it's going to look like.
Settle in, because you're going to be nervous for a long, long time.
Right. And
unfortunately,
we may not find out till 2017 now.
And what's funny, Tony, is when you guys were talking at the end of the last segment, we've talked for about 50 minutes on Fowler now. No telling how many conversations I had about it over the weekend, and I know telling how many conversations you had about
sure.
it over the weekend. And you talk about it, you say, well, it's a good thing it wasn't Yeldon. Well, he can do this, he can do this. And then as soon as you're finished talking, you've got that cruddy feeling in your gut.
Yeah.
It's like you can't talk your way out of how much this stinks.
No, you really can't. For a team, look, bottom line, for a team that I feel like they're giving you indications that they feel like it's time for them to start winning sure. games and start being not just competitive, but winning football games.
And that can still be. That doesn't change with
no,
this.
No, but they're stinks. Looking for stars.
Sure, yeah.
Like, and that's why they go get a guy like Dante Fowler III, because they think he can be a star, a difference yep. maker for this franchise in this league. And it's the way that the stories that you tell for 25 or 30 years about what could have been with a guy's start
right.
is an ACL injury at a rookie minicamp.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Today in football history, May 11th, we got a handful of birthdays for you today, and they're all active players, or at least recently active players. You can go back to 32 years old today, Matt Leinart. What a stunning career he had. 26 years old today, Cam Newton, the Carolina Panthers quarterback, certainly a rising star in the league. Jeremy Maclin, 27 years old today as well. But the star of this date in football history today with his birthday, 24 years young, a seventh-round draft pick in that terrible 2013 draft. And it just gets worse by the day as the news today of DJ Swearinger being released in Houston, their second-round safety from that year. But the Jaguars seem to have found something in the seventh round with cornerback Demetrius McCray. 24 years old today.
Yeah, happy birthday.
That's right. Earned himself a starting job here in Jacksonville as one of those corner spots. Played very well for this team last year. So happy birthday to Demetrius McCray.
I'm sure he's excited to share a birthday with Matt Lyons.
I'm sure he is.
Big for him.
Anyone would be. Dancing classes at USC. That's tap dancing. Was it tap? I can't remember. What it was. It ballroom?
Ballroom.
Yeah, it was ballroom dancing over there at USC for Matty Leinart. But happy birthday, Demetrius McCray. That is this date in football history brought to you today by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
More injuries coming to rookies at the rookie minicamp this weekend. One day after Dante Fowler goes down for the season in his first pro practice, another rookie suffers an ACL tear. Denver Broncos third-round pick tight end Jeff Huerman tore his left ACL during Saturday's rookie minicamp practice. The team says he will miss the rest of the season. The Patriots have the league's best tight end core, with Rob Gronkowski, Tim Wright, and also added former Buffalo Bill Scott Chandler this offseason. The Pats add another familiar name in former Redskins tight end Fred Davis. He joins the Patriots 4 days after being reinstated by the league after indefinite suspension for a second violation of the league's substance abuse policy. And finally, the NFL is always remembering and honoring our veterans at games, and rightfully so, but the motivation behind it for some teams may be a little bit different than you expect. Over the past 4 years, the Department of Defense has paid $5.4 million in taxpayer money to 14 NFL teams across the country. U.S. Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona has called out the Jets specifically for what he described as federally funded feel-good moments that the New Jersey Army National Guard has paid for. And the top team who has accepted the most money, the Atlanta Falcons, have taken in over $1 million in taxpayers' money over the last 4 years.
You can't just honor the troops, guys.
Why do you have to get paid for it? I don't get that.
Right. You can't spend 30 seconds of your game day. It's that important to you that you can't just find a way to honor the troops. But, yeah, I saw that story earlier today. Don't especially like it.
By the way, the Jags are not on that list.
Yeah.
Well, we shouldn't be. We're a Navy town. Man, if we were on that list, today would have taken a different tenor. I can promise you that. For a town that is as attached to the military and the Navy as Jacksonville happens to be. That Huerman thing is interesting. The third-round tight end in Denver, and I was going to bring it up in relation to the Dante Fowler thing, because a lot of fans express some frustration. Why are they running these drills? Blah, 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 blah. You know, 11-on-11s, why are we even running those at a rookie minicamp? And I can understand your frustration. Understand, Jeff Huerman, the third-round pick in Denver, who tore his ACL, didn't have a helmet on,
right?
Didn't have any pads on. He was running a one-on-one drill in shorts and tore his ACL. It doesn't matter what drill you're running. I get that the risk may go up depending on what you're doing in practice. freak injuries like this right. happen, and that's exactly what they are, freak.
It may go up, it may go down. I mean, it's, again, as I said at the top of the show, when guys are on the field moving around quickly at that size, ACLs are as often as not a non-contact, a fluky thing. It's not like this is the first time we sat here and talked about an ACL where you said, how in the world did that happen?
Right.
I mean, it's just the nature of it.
They're just wound so tight. It doesn't take much of a misstep
right.
for these guys that it gives up. Like, that joint just yeah. gives up, and they use it a lot more than you and I do.
Right. And
John.
It stinks, and I understand people wanting, when you're frustrated and hurt, which this, for a Jaguars fan, hurt them, you want to assign blame.
Yeah.
And so you want to say, well, was it, why was he on the field? Was it too soon? Was it the trainers? Was it this? Was it that? You know, nothing irritates me more than when people write in blaming the trainers for an injury. That's a pet peeve of mine.
Mm-hmm.
But especially a guy who they just met this morning.
Right. Sent,
so it's just, I get the need and the want to assign blame for things, but sometimes injuries in the NFL happen.
Yeah. They don't necessarily have to be anybody's fault. These guys get hurt.
Right.
It happens. If you could take them away from the league.
They get hurt on every team. They get
right.
hurt in every circumstance. They get hurt in every way, shape, and form because they are doing things at an unbelievably high level that the human body probably was not ideally designed to do.
Right. When you have guys that are 350, 370 pounds on offensive and defensive lines
right.
that are running 40s in under 5 seconds,
right.
look, that's crazy. The amount of force right. they're generating, it's crazy.
It stinks. I'm not downplaying how much it stinks.
Right.
But it's not a fault or a blame issue.
No. It's not because they're practicing in May. I mean, he could have done it walking around. He probably wouldn't have done it walking around, but it happens.
He could have done it 3 weeks ago at Florida, whenever he was doing his pro day at Florida.
Could have.
When he was doing pass, you know, whatever. He could have done it, you know, walking across the stage in a suit. You know,
yeah.
You never know.
And for
Probably not, but
for those fans who were wondering, and I did get this question a lot over the weekend, so we'll answer the question now. Regarding his contract, he did sign the injury waiver before
yes.
the camp opened up this weekend, which basically includes a clause that says even if there is an injury this weekend, the team will negotiate with him in good faith. Essentially what that means is that slotting system they have in
he'll
the,
be
in
paid
the NFL
somewhere
draft.
Between the number 2 and the number 4
right.
overall pick, just
right.
like he would have been.
Nothing's going to change with his contract.
As should be the case.
Yeah.
That's exactly, that's why the NFLPA and the NFL have developed that system. That's
mm-hmm.
the reason they do it. If they didn't, then no draft pick would ever show up
right.
for anything in minicamp or the offseason, nor should they. So it's a case where the system works.
No, it definitely does. So he'll get paid what he was going to get paid beforehand. None of that's going to change despite the fact that he wasn't officially under contract with the Jags yet.
Right.
And it's amazing how quick that process is working as a handful of teams have already signed all their draft picks. When you compare that
right.
where it was 7-8 years ago, when we would be getting to camp and you'd have like the first and the fourth round guys
yeah.
still not under contract, and are they going to be able to get him in time? That's no longer an issue.
It's
in the
remarkable
NFL.
In that it is as close to turnkey now as you could possibly imagine. And it was really a thing where 10 years ago, this was something that everybody in the league, veterans, coaches, general managers, knew was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That you were paying guys at the top of the draft exorbitant sums of money, and when veterans probably should have been getting out who've earned it, and they fixed it, and the new system works. So it was a case where they saw something that was wrong and got it fixed, and now this system makes perfect sense.
No, it does. And, again, Dante Fowler get paid what he should be getting paid.
Correct.
Just he'll get whatever that number 3 slot is going to wind up being in this year's NFL draft. We'll welcome in Mike Dempsey as he's, we'll see how far he's gone since last time we talked to him about 45 minutes ago or so, here in just a couple of moments as we continue along on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. We will get into some of the transactions for the Jags as well, as they have signed 5 players, waived 4 players after this weekend's mini camp. We'll let you know some of the names there, including one local kid who made the team from Bowles. We'll let you know about him as well. The fan feedback spotlight question of the day today. You can get involved with the question at 1010XL Fat Tony, at John Osier on Twitter, at 1010XL Tyler, also on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars Today. We're asking you quite simply, do your expectations for the 2015 season change at all with the injury to Dante Fowler Jr.? We'll get to some of your responses a little bit later on in the program, but that's the way that you can get involved with the fan feedback question of the day. Again, we'll welcome in Mike Dempsey next as we roll along here on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Rolling along here on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday edition, Jaguars Today, Fat Tony, John Osher alongside. We'll welcome back Mike Dempsey here in just a couple minutes. He's giving up. He's heading back down south.
So disappointed.
To the homestead. Couldn't quite make it here today with all the traffic problems we got. We'll welcome in Mike in a second, but do want to get into some of the latest news here with the Jags, as they have made some announcements as far as the roster after the weekend mini camp, and just wanted to get your reaction, John, before we get out to Mike. The 5 guys that they brought in: defensive tackle Richard Ash, defensive end Cap Cappy, wide receiver and punt returner Casey Claus, free safety Desmond Cooper, who went to Bowles. That's the local kid who made it here. And offensive lineman Jack Rummels, all being signed to that 90-man roster. Anything stand out for you there?
Not a whole lot. They need Ed to look at defensive tackle, simply because of the injury situation there. Sendarek and Roy aren't on the field during the offseason, so you need people to play the position. Really what this weekend was about for, in terms of analyzing the roster from the personnel side, was figuring out if there was anybody that wasn't on your roster there who should replace anybody who was on your roster.
Right.
So they're looking at the bottom guys, and they were looking primarily, are some of these tryout guys have a higher upside than some of the veterans that you've already seen, you've spent a season around, you sort of know what they are. Was there anybody worth taking a chance on? And they found 5 guys that they believe are worth taking a chance on. So, you know, good.
Sure. The 4 guys they turn off the bottom end of that roster.
Yeah.
Safety, Jeremy Deering. Kicker, Derek Dimke. Obviously, I think we know who the kicker is going to be. And
Escobie's got a shot.
In 2015, wide receiver Tommy Streeter and tight end Marcel Jensen, all waived by the team. A couple names there.
Yeah, and Jensen's like a lot of guys, come in, looks for a while like you might get a little something out of him. Didn't work out where they thought he had enough upside to keep over the next young guy who comes in. So that's what that is. Streeter was a 6th-round draft pick, I believe. So they brought him in thinking there may be something there, and once again, didn't quite show enough to be worth keeping over the younger guys.
Sure. That's
kind of how minicamp is.
Let's welcome back in Mike Dempsey as he has turned around. I heard you're heading back south now, Mike. You've given up on trying to get downtown.
Bad enough. Yeah.
How far did you get?
I got 210 over to US-1, and it looked like it was a crawl, and I calculated time and distance. I figured you guys would love to see me for the last 2 minutes of the show.
Sure.
I figured I'll just go ahead and save the aggravation and see you guys tomorrow. So I am on US-1. The car is pointed southbound at the moment, however.
I can't blame you. We'll miss you on cross talk.
So you've been in the car how long today, Mike? Right
now? Well, that's a good question. I got in the car at 7:15 this morning to drop my son off for school, and since then, and I've gone nowhere.
That's just
4 hours.
That's the worst feeling to get nothing out of it. Nothing, Mike. Nothing.
I got to talk to you guys. Are you kidding me? What do you mean nothing out of it? And by the way, I thought Casey Claus, all kidding aside, as much as you can stand out in the minicamp, I thought he did a very nice job. But it's easy to spot the receivers. But he looked big. He looked athletic. I watched Jerry Sullivan working with him and a number of other young receivers out there. You know how he is, very particular, guys, about exactly where you step, how you turn, what angle you're coming out of your break. And I thought Klaus picked it up quickly, exactly what Sullivan was showing him. And every time he caught the ball, like in a crossing pattern, was able to turn his body, you know, no wasted motion, get upfield, looked pretty fast to me. So, you know, it's, again, rookie minicamp, no, you know, hardcore defense being played out there. But I would have been surprised if they had kept four or five guys, and Klaus wasn't one of those guys.
Sure, and a couple other notes coming out of camp that we just haven't gotten to yet. Rashad Greene seemed like he was pretty nervous out there, and I know, Mike, you and I talked about it a little bit when I was out there on Saturday. There are probably 29 teams in the league where Rashad Greene can go, and he's pretty much anonymous. But in Jacksonville and Tampa and probably in Miami, that would be the exception where everybody knows who Rashad Greene is, everyone knows what he did in college, and there would be this excitement level for a fifth-round pick that I don't think would exist in a lot of places that he could have landed, and you can understand a guy like that being a little nervous coming in this weekend.
Sure. It was a rough practice for him on Friday in particular, some drops. I mean, these were not bad passes. These were passes right in the hands, just kind of uncharacteristic stuff, the kind of stuff that if he was an undrafted non-roster invitee, wouldn't have got him invited back, but
right.
You know what his body of work is, and they're not going to worry about it. And that's exactly what it came down to. Gus admitted as much after practice. I can't remember if it was Friday or Saturday's press conference where he said, I talked to him. He said there were some nerves there, and he'll get over it. I'm sure he will.
Yeah, and the other guy is Neil Sterling, the seventh-round receiver out of Monmouth that I know as soon as he got drafted, there was some speculation as to whether he's going to be more of a move tight end because of his size. He's a big, big guy at 6'3", 230 pounds, somewhere around there is Neil Sterling. And I can tell you, looking at him this weekend, he looks like a wide receiver to me. Doesn't look like a tight end, looks like a wide receiver, at least seeing him through those first 2 days.
Yeah, much more athletic than you would have expected.
Yeah, go ahead, John.
No, I was saying much more athletic and much more like a wide receiver than maybe you would have expected had you not seen him.
Right, because there was some speculation, this guy, what is this guy exactly? And, you know, again, it's running against air for the most part, even in the one-on-ones. It's not like you're getting full bump and run coverage out there. But I talked to Dave Caldwell for a moment or two, and he asked him, you know, who stood out to him, and he mentioned Sterling as a guy that he thought flashed in addition to Yeldon. And is it Corey Grant, who's the running back at Auburn that they signed?
Yes.
Dave Caldwell also talked about, looked like he had a little bit of juice in his legs out there. So look, this is a time for these guys to impress and hopefully catch the eye and, you know, just get a chance to compete for a spot for most of them.
Yeah, while we got you, Mike, I wanted to quickly look back on these guys, their first draft, 2013, and it's back in the news a little bit today because DJ Swearinger's being released by the Houston Texans. That was their second-round pick that year at safety. I had a fan ask me on Twitter, do I think the Jaguars would be interested in Swearinger? No, I don't think they're going to have any interest in DJ Swearinger. But you look, and specifically, we'll start with what the Texans did in the 2013 draft. DeAndre Hopkins in the first round, he looks like he's going to turn into a pretty good player for them. DJ Swearinger, who's going to be released or traded here soon. Brennan Williams in the third round, who's a guy they've already cut. The Jaguars
he's
actually signed
yep.
him after he got cut because of microfracture in his knee. Third round also that year, Sam Montgomery, who's already off the team for Houston. Trevardo Williams, the defensive end out of UConn. I don't remember ever hearing his name anywhere. David Quessenberry in the sixth round. Alan Bonner, Chris Jones, Ryan Griffin. That was the draft for the Houston Texans that year. So they got nothing out of it except that first-round pick and DeAndre Hopkins. They've gotten zero out of that draft, and we're talking just 3 years later. When you look at what the Jaguars did, and it's a draft that we've talked a lot about because of the expectations. They take Luke Jokel at number two, right? They take Jonathan Cyprian at the top of the second round and feel like they need both those guys to develop into those types of players where you're drafting them in those kind of slots. Dwayne Grotz in the third round, Ace Sanders in the fourth, Denard Robinson, Josh Evans, Jeremy Harris, Demetrius McCray. The Jaguars in a draft where Houston has one player that has made any impact on their roster in 3 years. They found three starters in there. potentially four, depending on what happens with Josh Evans this year. It sounded like Dave Caldwell would certainly like to see him compete for one of those safety spots again this year. But potentially four and a fifth guy in a Denard Robinson where he's helped you on the field. Yeah. And that doesn't even include a guy like Dwayne Grotz.
It was tough to get the core of a roster out of that draft for anybody, I think. It was a weak draft. But the Jaguars got, as you said, four or five guys who I think it's fair to say the book's still out on all of them.
Sure.
And especially Joaquin Cyprien need to play better this year. There's a lot of confidence that Cyprien's going to play better. And there's the same, if you listen to Doug Marone, there's the same about Joaquin. So if those two guys get to a level of being solid starters where you feel good about them, then it's a remarkably good draft. But the book is out on that class, as you would expect.
No, it certainly is a little bit. But when you look at, and I haven't gone through team by team to see what they all did in that draft, because everyone knows that 2013 draft, there just wasn't much there. There right. wasn't much there, right? And we've talked about that over and over and over again. But when you look at it and you start comparing it to other sure. teams, Houston specifically, they got something out of a draft class that there didn't seem to be much there, Mike.
Yeah, you know, look, we don't know in the long term how much these guys have played a lot of football for the Jags, but how much of that is due to the state of the roster? You know what I mean? We'll find out if and when the Jags let these guys go at the end of their first deals or if they decide to re-up them, which is a better indicator, how quickly they get picked up. Will they be contributors elsewhere? I'm not saying compared to Houston's draft, they haven't done well, which they have, but that's kind of the story of the NFL. Guys, you might hit on two or three of your draft picks. You don't hit on seven. The Jags have kept most of their draft picks because their roster was so lacking in talent. And DeAndre Hopkins is a pretty good player right now. And quite frankly, if you get one really good player, you might take that over three, four, five okay players because that's what the Jags have right now. Demetrius McCray, right now, maybe the best guy that they have, most guy that you know what you can expect out of him or think you know what you can expect out of him among the potential starters. I think Jonathan Cyprien's just been a guy so far. Luke Joeckel, for whatever combination of reasons, we understand the injuries and all that, has not looked like the number two overall pick in the draft. He's still incredibly young. I know they're, you know, still believing they will get that out of him, and time will tell. Let me just say this about Swearinger. The Swearinger thing's been out there for a few weeks that they were getting ready to let this guy go. The word is he, quote, didn't fit into the culture of the team, which is a major red flag. He owns a pit bull, which I don't know if you guys have seen this or not. The pit bull ended up biting Jadeveon Clowney this offseason and sending him to the emergency room. That's the wrong guy to bite, right? Other than J.J. Watt, that's the wrong guy to bite if you're in Houston. So Swearinger kind of persona non grata right now with the Texans, and I tend to agree. I don't think the Jags are going to have much interest there.
You better be playing really well if your pit bull is going to bite
If your pit bull is going to send Clowney to the emergency room, right? Like, you better be playing well.
Watt's pit bull could bite Clowney. That'd be okay.
That'd be like,
Watt could bite Clowney, and that would be fine. Whatever he wants to do would be okay.
Yeah, I remember
go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike. No, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to kind of go off path here for a second. I wanted to take a minute, if you'll indulge me, and talk about the Justin Blackman, what I tweeted out about him this weekend. I intended to address this morning. Obviously, we got some weird circumstances here. I don't want to belabor it, but as we talked about on the show when it occurred, Mark Long of the Associated Press obviously covers the Jags for a long time. He's one of our co-hosts during the season on Jaguars Today. Came on XL Primetime a couple weeks ago and stated that Justin Blackman, to his knowledge, had applied for reinstatement and had been denied by the National Football League. He was the only guy at the time, and still to my knowledge, the only guy reporting that. And I was unclear and said as much on the air a couple weeks ago whether Mark was trying to put the pieces together. Was he speculating? Is this an educated guess? Or was he actually reporting this based on source information? And so, Tony, you were there with me on Saturday when the first time I seen Mark face-to-face, got an opportunity to talk to him, and I asked him just that. Is this a speculation on your part? Or are you reporting this? He said, I am reporting this. This happened. Okay? I said, Are you okay if I put your name on it? If I quote you, because I'm not going to go with it. The only reason, you know, typically you go with a two-source story. To me, it's not my story. It's Mark Long's story. He's already stated it on the air. I'm just restating it for purposes of clarification, because I'm sure there were others like me who weren't sure if he was saying this happened or I think this is likely to have happened. And he is saying that that happened. Do I have any information on that? Absolutely not. But I'm passing along a well-respected reporter who said I could go on the record with his name that he stands by that proclamation. And there, if you read my whole Twitter timeline for this weekend, there were a few other things in there all attributed to what Mark said. We've invited Mark to come on the program. He's going to come on. He's not ducking us or anything. He comes on XL Primetime all the time. He will be on as soon as his schedule permits, perhaps as soon as tomorrow, to talk about that. I just wanted to address it because in case anybody saw it on Twitter, I was waiting to hear more about it. We really don't know anymore other than to say it's a clarification that what Mark went on with 2 weeks ago, according to him, is the factual information of what happened. Again, I've seen nobody else corroborate that, but Mark is a well-respected reporter who, by the way, broke the story of Justin Blackman initially being in rehab. So he's been out ahead of this story for the most part. So, you know, I have no reason to distrust him. I'm not trying to cast it in that light. I'm just trying to be very clear about what information I was passing along. And Mark, Tony, you were there on Saturday right next to me for the whole conversation, and we've gone over this before we came on the air today. Everything I said, I'm sure, goes along with what you heard on Saturday as well.
Yep, I heard the entire conversation, and you summed it up there. We're reporting a story that Mark Long said we could use his name on. And whether it's, we don't know because no one else is confirming what happened with Justin Blackman, but that is at least what Mark Long is saying happened with Justin Blackman. So hopefully there'll be some clarification over the course of the next couple days and weeks with what is occurring with Blackman, because it certainly would be a nice piece to have. Sure. If they can get him at some point. We've been waiting to hear, you know, what is going on with Justin. It's a question I know all of us, as people who cover this team, get asked a lot by fans, is what's up with Justin? And we've been saying for months, we don't know. Like,
right.
Nothing is up with Justin until he applies for reinstatement.
It sounds like Mark has talked to people who he certainly trusts, and he believes this. I have not heard anything to corroborate that.
Right.
I agree with that, John.
But I respect Mark as much as you do, Mike.
Yeah, I've asked around, and nobody else has corroborated it either. But again, Mark's just not a guy off the street. Mark is a reporter who has already stated this information on the air, and all I'm doing is clarifying the fact that he was reporting that as something that actually happened and not as something that he suspected had happened.
Yeah. Yeah, just wanted to clarify that because I do think some fans who saw that over the weekend were probably waiting to see what else we had to say about it. And in the end, it's not much. It's that Mark Long told us that and said that told Mike he could. Yes, Mark Long is saying that that's what he's hearing happen with Justin Blackman. All right, Mike, hopefully we'll get a chance to see you in studio tomorrow if 95 Southbound is open by then.
I may just turn around and start heading in right now for Tuesday's show. I should be there on time.
All right. It sounds good. We'll see you tomorrow, Mike.
Mike, thanks.
All right. That's Mike Dempsey. He got caught, if you haven't heard, 95 northbound today, which just a nightmare.
He's pretty good on the air. We should have him on as a guest sometime.
You know, it's probably not a bad idea. It's probably not a bad idea. The Fan Feedback Spotlight, we're asking you today, in light of the news this weekend with Dante Fowler Jr. and the torn ACL, have your expectations changed at all for the 2015 season? We'll get to some of your responses here in just a moment at 1010XL Fat Tony, at John Osher, at 1010XL Tyler, also on our Facebook page, facebook.com/JaguarsToday. We'll get to your responses to that question as it is the first broadcast day here on 1010XL since the injury to the Dante Fowler Jr.'s ACL. So we'll get some of your reaction as the fan base out there a couple days after that injury occurred as we continue to roll along on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. A few minutes left here on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday edition of Jaguars Today. Fat Tony along with John Osher, senior writer for Jaguars.com. I'm sure it was I can imagine some of the questions you were getting this weekend over there for the Ozone over the course of the last two and a half days after that injury.
Yeah, and you filter through a lot of it because when it first happened on Friday, you get the, oh my goodness, the season's over. You get the blame questions. You get the people angry. And when people are angry and frustrated, you don't always think logically.
Right.
So who can we blame for this? I had one person actually say, this is what we get for drafting a player from Florida. and I just, I read it and reread it, and I frankly started laughing.
Yeah.
What
else can you do?
It's not the person's fault. They read and they get angry, and then they pull, well, we shouldn't have done this, or we should have drafted Leonard Williams. Leonard Williams might have gotten hurt that day, too.
Could have, too.
Mark Cooper might have gotten hurt.
Right, you don't know.
You just don't know. It's bad luck. It's unfortunate. It's everything we've talked about all day. But it's just not anybody's fault.
No, it's not anybody's fault. And all the, it's our fault for drafting a guy to Florida talk. Please remember that Fred Taylor was a Gator. Or that Mike Pete, although he wasn't a draft pick of this team, was a Gator. Like, there have been Gators.
There's a lot of good football players from Florida.
Right, that have been successful on this team.
If Dante Fowler had gone to UCF, the same thing might have happened. Obviously, it's absurd. We all get that.
Nothing to do with their
But, school. You know, the passion and the disappointment over it were striking and understandable, and it'll take time to digest. At the same time, you know, Dante Fowler was a huge piece, a dynamic piece of what they were doing this offseason. But in no way was he the only piece. And, I mean, there was some disappointment and some, you know, some air out of the sails inside, everywhere. You can't be around this and not have been a little disappointed. You'd be disingenuous if you had said, hey, the guy we picked number three and we're thinking was going to start and be very dynamic out for the season. Oh, it's okay. I mean, nobody's saying that.
No.
But over time, they'll figure out it. And they already have. Look, there are options here. Dante should be fine long term. It's still a good draft class. It's still a good free agent class. You've still got young guys on this roster who are developing, which is really the main way they're going to improve, is to have the young guys continue to develop and continue to be the core. Dante Fowler will become part of that core when he gets back on the field.
And that brings us to our fan feedback spotlight question of the day. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships ask Jaguars fans every day, what drives you? Today we're asking, how, if at all, have your expectations changed with the injury to Dante Fowler Jr.? Some of the responses we got from Stewart, they don't. 16-0. Hashtag no limits. From greatness deferred at Irish Jaguar, it hasn't. Defense still improved with the additions of Audric Sample and Scuda. Offense should be better too. From AG Jag fan, none. Wasn't expecting a lot from a rookie. More about Blake and the wide receivers. From David, I hope the days are over when an injury to a single player would derail an entire season. The Duke of Duval, not much. Hurts to not have him. But now there's an opportunity for someone else to step up. From Cristiano, not much. Defense is okay. Expectations are about an improved offense. That said, get well soon, Dante. From Paolo, at first I thought it was the end of the world. Today I feel like we will be okay. Big expectations for Chris Smith. From Brian, on Friday, lowered expectations. By Monday, figured we'll only win 10 games instead of 11. From Eric, really not sure. It sucks, but not sure he was going to be the answer as a rookie anyways. From Cam, excitement level took a hit, but I was always more concerned about the offense than defense. From Black Dog, initially crushed, since then eased up to a mild morning, but we still have a lot of good players to watch. From Alex, none. A rookie defensive end was never going to affect the win-loss record. Record will be a result of Bortles' play. From Mikey, I called in work because I'm still feeling that gut punch, but I still believe in this team. From Bobby, expectations haven't changed, but I feel bad for Fowler. He's a great kid. Hopefully his future remains bright. From Demetrius, not much. Yes, Fowler would have made this defense better, but the development of Smith and Davis keeps me optimistic. From Josh, negative, but my expectations on pre-draft moves, base my expectations on pre-draft moves, so I have an idea of what we have from guys already on pro level. And from Isaiah, not really, but wish him the best. Don't think it changes the season that much. And look, I'm kind of on board with that. I don't think it changes my expectations for 2015 all that much. I do think, look, there are a handful of guys that you could point out that if it was them tearing an ACL, doing something this weekend over the course of the next couple weeks, that you'd be like, oh no, what are they going to do?
Right.
And Bortles would be at the top of that list. It's a what?
Far and away.
Right. So, yeah, it's about the development of Bortles and some of those other young guys on the offensive side of the ball.
I think the tweet that said the excitement level.
Right.
I think that's exactly what it is, because there was that hope and that chance, and a very real chance, that there would be – I'm not going to compare him to Tony Brackens. Remember, Tony Brackens played here.
Mm-hmm.
And there were games where, you know, you wouldn't hear anything from Tony Brackens for two or three games. And then he'd make a play that won you a game. And it was exciting, and it was game-turning, and it was thrilling.
Yeah.
That's the sort of impact that you were hoping to see at times from Fowler early. And it's always a hope when it's a rookie. You're not depending on that from a rookie. But that's sort of what you held your breath and said, yeah, we might see that. That'd be really cool. And that would help in a lot of ways. It's not a core foundation, building block piece as a rookie, maybe, but it's something that you wanted to see that a few times as a rookie and then say, okay, this is going to be special as it moves on. And that'd have been fun.
No, it would have been fun. And, you know, this weekend talked a little bit about the other injuries the Jaguars have had over, you know, the course of this franchise's history. You had Boselli going into the 99 playoffs. Mm-hmm. You had Searcy in 2000.
That's the one I equate most with, as really early in training camp, and all of a sudden, poosh.
Yep.
Fred Taylor really ended 2000.
Yeah, Fred Taylor with the groin injury that we all saw on the field. I mean, there's been a handful that you remember, right? They're vivid in your mind. Searcy may be the closest to this. You're right, because there is this just deflation. You know, it's not that, again, my expectations for 2015 change all that much. It's that all that momentum that they had developed over the course of the last month and a half with free agency and into the draft feels like it just stopped dead for a couple of days.
It was the timing of it, an hour. And I mean, again, I wrote on Saturday, I think, unthinkable and unreal. You just
it's May 8th.
You kept looking at it, and you saw him going off on the field, and you looked out there, and he wasn't out there, and you're like, are you kidding?
Right. Baseball players should be getting hurt on May 8th.
Right.
Not football players.
That's what everybody, even the media on the sidelines, kept saying, are you kidding me?
Right.
Like, you look at each other and just say, what? Just admit, you know, you didn't expect it, and it felt so opposite of everything that everybody had been feeling for 6 weeks.
Yeah. No, it certainly did, and as we said earlier, for a team that is looking to get stars in here now,
right,
that feel like they have got the roster to a point where it should be much more competitive, start winning some football games, now it's about bringing in difference-making talent. And they felt like Dante Fowler was one of those guys. And they still feel like he's one of those guys. Let's be clear. They're not saying that they think, oh, we're done. Dante Fowler, it's not over for that guy. They still feel like he's going to be a difference-making talent for this team in the future. It's that he's not going to get the opportunity to show any of that in 2015. And that's disappointing for everybody, from the fans to the guys that work in this building to his teammates. Look, it's got to be disappointing. You hate to lose a guy, especially at this point in the season, that had those kind of expectations heaped upon him coming in and felt like he could live up to him, too. Like you mentioned Tony Brackens. Brackens was a great player,
mm-hmm,
probably the best pass rusher this franchise has ever seen. But he never seemed to like football the way Dante Fowler Jr. does. And while he may not have the
impact. He was a
different
personality type,
right,
too. Tony was not a guy who was going to come out and be very friendly with the media.
No.
I liked Tony. I didn't mind dealing with him. But he didn't love the camera. He didn't love being sort of the focus of attention. He was his own guy.
He seemed like a guy who
Dante
loved his
Fowler,
farm and played football.
Right. Dante Fowler, early on, we've only known him for a few brief days here in Jaguars media, but it seems to be one of those guys who really loves what he's doing.